Welcome back to Deep Tissue Talks. Today, our guest is renowned celebrity healer Fabrice Gautier. In my opinion, in our field, healing others requires more than just a deep knowledge of anatomy and biomechanics. You often hear me talk about the three layers of pain: mechanical, somatic, and spiritual. And to me, those are essential skills that are guaranteed to manifest healing. But true mastery comes from healing yourself first. And Fabrice's journey is a powerful testament to resilience and self-awareness. In this heartfelt conversation, you'll gain insight into Fabrice's unique approach to patient care, from addressing musculoskeletal imbalance to integrating the mind-body connection. You'll also be a witness of how I incorporate talk therapy to help release emotions that manifest as tension and pain stored deep within the fascia and muscle tissue. Remember, you are not your pain. Your pain is you.
Hello, Doris. Thank you for having me today on your show. I'm very excited to be part of it, to be one of the first one. Proud of you for doing this.
Thank you.
And I can't wait where we go.
Let's go. So before we start, I want to know, how do you feel today? How's your body feeling? So, any pain?
Yeah, I mean, today I have, it's been having a nagging pain on my elbow. I've been adjusted a big guy and I took the force into my elbow, so I kind of sprained it a little bit. Tightness on the trapezius, on the shoulder.
Everybody does. Yeah. Crazy.
And that's pretty much it. I'm doing pretty okay.
All right.
Yep.
Let's go. What was it like to grow up in your family in France, and how did you end up in LA?
It's a good question. The grow up in France was very chill. I was lucky enough to have, mom and dad, athletes. My mom was a teacher. So she was at home. I mean, she's working, of course, but they're a little bit more at home. And my dad was having a t-shirt printing company. But they were both athletes.
What sport did you
play? My dad was a really good soccer player, a striker. And my mom was a volleyball player. And so I was living in the very close suburb of Paris, but nice suburb, 8,000 people. Park in front of the house. So I had a very chill childhood with my sister. She's 6 years older than me, she was doing track and field. So the whole family, dad playing soccer, mom playing volleyball, gym rat, started with soccer. But as I was taller than most of the kid, they put me as a defensive player. My dad was a striker. All I wanted to do was score. So when I turned 11, my doctor was like, "Oh, you have a little bit of a kyphosis. Your back is a little bit arched like this, or unarched. So you should try basketball. It's an extension sport that will probably help you." And so my dad took me to the first basketball practice and took the ball. Which was a sky hook back then. I didn't know, but the ball went in. I was like, "Oh, that's cool. It's easy." And then the coach, it was a lady. She was like, "Hey, he's tall. Give him the ball. He's going to score." That's it. That's all I needed. And then after that, basketball was my first love. And as I grew, I became a very diehard Lakers fan.
Why the Lakers?
So I was reading that magazine, Maxi Basket. So by the time, I'm old, I'm 50. So it was in the 80s. You didn't have the NBA on TV. It was only on the magazine. And
this is a good one.
They were talking about the NBA final between Magic and Larry Bird and the Celtics. And I just fell in love with Magic, the smile, the showtime, the colors. Yes. And then you would get game one, game two, then you had to wait a month before you get the results of the actual series, and you'll get 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And I just, you know, was reading all the stuff, all every single thing. I knew every single player's size, where he was coming from. So I slowly fell in love with basketball. And as you play basketball, you sprain your ankle a little bit once or twice, and then you meet the physical therapist that's the friend of your dad. And that became slowly my plan B, because my goal was to play with Magic Johnson and beat Michael Jordan. But obviously it didn't work out. But by a really very early age, I had a plan B, which was becoming a physical therapist. And only until I went to Minneapolis for a year after my baccalaureate to try to play basketball.
You still went to the U.S.?
Yes. I pushed it. I really tried, really tried to make it. But I was already, I was academically college bound. And age-wise, I was a senior in high school, but I couldn't play. I wasn't eligible. I still played a lot. And when I came back to France, I worked a little bit. And then I went with my best friend in L.A. And that first day in Venice Beach, I woke up with the jet lag at 5 a.m. And I was like, okay, that's where I want. I had that big, deep feeling, instinct, like gut feeling that I wanted to live there. So, you know, I was 92. 92, 7 years later, I moved.
Nice. So I want to continue to work on your shoulder in like different angles.
I love it.
And so what I want to know is, how do you arrive in LA and start your business?
That's a good story too. So first thing, you know, didn't do anything without my wife. So we met in school, in PT school in France. And when we first starting to go out, I was like, hey, we go out, but 5 years I'm in LA. And she was like, yeah, right. Okay.
Sure.
And 5 years arrived and I'm like, okay, let's go. So we went. And at the time, like the internet was like, beep, 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 you know. So from France to do all the paperwork, it was a nightmare.
Imagine.
So she was the one actually saying, okay, you know what? I'm tired. Let's just fucking go and we'll see. So 6 suitcase, a little bit of cash.
And it's you and your kids too, right?
No, they weren't born yet.
Okay.
We did. They came after. And we arrived in LA in February. I think it was the 23rd exactly. It's funny how you remember those dates when they change your life. And I met a French physical therapist before for one of our previous trips. So he hosted us in his house for 3 weeks. And then the first thing you need to do when you arrive in the United States, and that was pre 9/11, is find someone that's going to get you your green card. So he said, listen, there is two French doctors. There's Dr. Maurice Levy and Dr. Mazouz. And I went to see the first one, Dr. Levy, and I never went to see the other one. He was like, yeah, okay, I need a physical therapist. You can work with me. I'll sponsor you. So that was the first part. But you still need to get your license. You need to get your degree. And you cannot get your degree if you're not legal, and you cannot get legal if you don't get your degree.
And it's fucking expensive.
And it's expensive. So
that's why I never did it.
So I started to take all the courses, and it's kind of frustrating because you have a decent amount of classes in France with your baccalaureate. And they had me take history, philosophy that had nothing to do with the physical therapy. But long story short, 2 years later, I finally passed my diploma. And, you know, thinking I'm going to get my papers. I got all the stuff. And my lawyer's like, yeah, they're asking for another paper. Can you send me your TOEFL? They need to know that you speak English. Say, okay, I just passed a very hard test in English, but yeah, okay, let's do it. And it didn't push through enough. It was a whole diploma that you needed to get and, of course, pay another $800. And I received a paper from the immigration 2 days later. It was like, hey, you've been denied. You have 2 days to leave the country. It was that was like, I just started the office.
Oh my God. And like,
so we're like,
your dream is about to just.
So again, yeah. Alex, my wife, she took care of the papers. She went to find the right lawyer. You pay a fine again. And I did all the tests that I needed to do in English, got the diploma, and finally I was good.
Alex is the best. She's actually your wife and also a physical therapist.
Yeah, so, yeah, she's, I always say she's the best osteopath. She's much better than me. And a world champion. But yeah, she took care of it. I mean, at some point, the first year, 2 years for her was tough. And she took care of it and she helped me and we built the office together. She doesn't necessarily like to work with athletes. She works more with pregnant women and babies. Mm-hmm. But, and that was it, 2003, we created the office, which is very boutique, very one-on-one.
Mm. And you were in Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills, right in front of Earth Cafe. And we've been there for 20 years now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we're starting the 21st year. And like you say, it's a... I always say it's the best kept secret in town.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're the most wanted healer. Everybody knows your name and mm-hmm. wants to get healed by you. But you're very hard to get into your schedule because you're super
busy.
And
I travel so much too, that's the blessing and the curse. Mm-hmm. But that's how we started. And there's some funny stories along the way. Like after 6 months, so I told Alex, 6 months, I have my green card. I got my diploma. We're good. We're rocking. And meanwhile, it took 2 years. 6 months, we lost the apartment. We had a truck full of furniture and nowhere to go.
It's like...
Yes.
Like
and all our friends in France, they're working for like 2 or 3 years. They're buying their house. They're doing things, you know, they're moving up in life. And... that was also a defining moment because she was laughing. She was like, okay, let's empty the truck. We had a friend that let us stay in her living room and we were both laughing. Mm. I was like, you know, if you're good in those moments, we'll be good for the rest of our life. So, okay, let's get married. And then we got married in the living, I mean, not in the living room, but we prepared the wedding with our parents from the living room and then the kids and then everything else.
That's amazing. Yeah. You're one of the best in the business, and one of the reasons you're one of the best is because you, when you treat a patient, mm-hmm. you look for the root of the problem. Mm-hmm. No, you don't just go to the pain. And we've all been to a doctor telling him that we have a pain just to be given a pill mm-hmm. or, you know, surgery. And so even though like sometimes there is no way around it because, you know, especially in sports, like show must go on.
Yeah.
But there is still ways to find where does the pain come from so that you can actually make sure that it doesn't come back and that it heals properly. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how do you work with pain, the type of pain that you treat, like, mm-hmm. and the difference between an osteopath and a chiropractor?
Okay. So the first question that you asked or the comment that you made was like trying to go for the root. That's actually the whole concept of osteopathy. It's you look at the person as a unit, as a circle, as a whole. So it's holistic, which a lot of different therapy have that mindset that behind it. What I like and what differentiates itself from the osteopathic is that you have the structural aspect that's very close to the chiropractic, which is the adjustments, mm-hmm. but you also combine the visceral manipulation and the craniosacral. Mm-hmm. And as you learn, as you have experience, you also, and I'm in no case a shrink, but you also learn and you discover that the emotional aspect sometimes, not every time, plays a big part in the injuries or the, I would say, the repetitive injury or the non-healing.
Yeah, yeah, the somatic pain, I see it all the time. Sure.
And the thing that happens is that the first thing I do that I don't know if, you know, like I had a patient that gave me a good, he asked me if I felt that I was one of the best. And I have that, you know, a little imposter syndrome, little humility, I guess, from growing up in France, having, you know, the family that They keep you on, like, yeah. Exactly, like, stay your yeah. feet on the ground. Yeah. And my mom had a good one too. One time, it's like heads in the stars, but feet on the ground.
Yes,
you should have dreams, but basically, was asking me, do you feel that you're one of the best? That you're the best at what you do after all your experience, the people you work with. I'm like, I don't really think like that. And at some point, he sent me a message like, if you work with the best, you're among the best.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me think. It's like, okay, maybe. I might take that compliment, okay? Mm. Because, yeah, I work with some of the best people in what they do and not just sports. Mm. So I guess you have results. And to go back to what you were saying, the first thing I do, the first thing they teach us, the first thing that the patient doesn't see is that I observe.
Yes.
I observe.
They don't realize that we're always like looking. I'm
looking at them when they don't know,
mm-hmm.
looking at their shoulder height, position of the neck.
And then they ask you, how do you know where to press?
And we can tell,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not just me as an osteopath, a lot of healer, a lot of people working with patients.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell already by just looking that, okay, I have some work here and there.
Yeah.
Then you ask the question, and then the moment where you put your hands on the patient, you have a transfer of energy.
Yeah.
My energy, their energy. And I can feel things, you know, you can feel where the trauma, the restriction of mobility are stored. And you go from there, you do your investigation, and you try to, like you said, you try to go for the root. You're not always successful, but hopefully most of the time you are. Otherwise, I would still not do this job.
Sometimes it takes time too,
and,
right?
And sometimes it's going to take 2, 3, 4 sessions for things to open. And sometimes, especially, and I think that's why I'm very successful, I think, and that's why I feel the most successful, is that sometimes it's not for you to help, you refer.
Mm-hmm.
And you work as a team. It mm-hmm. takes a village to help
yes.
any type of individuals. And when they realize you're not about having them, milking them, having
come every week.
Come every week. And you send them to someone that's actually going to help them. They always come back and they're so appreciative.
Yeah. Sometimes it takes a village and it takes somebody to like compliment. That's why like I love when we work in the French team because we have different fields.
Yeah.
We want to go to the same result, but together we're just stronger.
Yes. And so that's what I like about the job. And I feel that I surrounded myself with some of the best as well.
Mm.
And to finish the question in terms of what I bring also a little bit different, that I'm also a physical therapist.
Mm-hmm.
When you study osteopathy in France, they tell you, oh, you need to just be an osteopath. But I love both jobs, so I never wanted to quit. I would say I do 80% osteopathy and 20% physical therapy. But every time I realign a patient, I work on a patient, I always make sure I'll try to reprogram their central nervous system with their new mobility. So there is always an education part, which we can trace back to maybe my mother, who was a teacher.
Ah.
Everything's rooted in the mother.
You have a family, you have a wife, mm-hmm. very busy schedule, really demanding. How do you balance family time, work, and also for yourself?
Yeah, for myself comes always last. But I think the way it build up, I think, like I said, we started in that living room. We were not paying rent. We were decided to get married. I just got my license. Then, you know, we opened the practice, so it takes time. I guess we did a lot of stuff early, like getting the kids and starting the office, where the first 9 years, I wasn't so busy. So at least for the kids, those first 9 years, I don't feel I missed anything or not much. And because we were living here, we were always sending them in France to spend 3 weeks with each grandparents, which they had them fully as well. So they were not seeing us as you would see, you know, your family if you would live like, I don't know, 20 minutes from each other, but they would actually enjoy their grandkids a different way.
And being the French language.
Yes.
That's super important.
They would be bilingual. Then 2009 came the French national team, Tony Parker, Boris Diaw, Ronny Turiaf. And so every summer I would be with the French national team. So that would start to take a little bit of me away from the family, which always hard. But we would always try to, I remember 2011, took the kid and I was with Tony Parker in Normandy and we took the kid and they did his camp. So we would always try, it would never be perfect, but we would always try to be with them also while I was there. And having them leave a little bit of the experience of what I was doing and spend some time over there. And I would say the real, real heartbreaker in the sense of really living was really when I started to work with a tennis player on the tour.
Yeah, because it's a schedule that's way heavier.
Yeah, and I was gone to every Grand Slam, every major tournament, and that was much, much more. Because when I go to see an NBA player for a day or two, okay, daddy is going to see, but he's back in 2 days.
Yeah.
The tennis, it was like 3 weeks,
that's what
4 weeks.
I tell my son, like two dodos, mama will be.
Yeah. So that was starting to be a little bit more impactful on, I would say, myself, but also especially maybe the kids and the family, and we're starting to be teenagers. So that was the, that would probably be when it started. So I already had a good amount of time with my kids, you know? So then after taking care of myself, now I take more of myself. Because I feel like, okay, my kids are 23, 21, they're doing their things, I have a little bit more time. But it's still super hard because we're healers, we're givers, we're fixers.
Yeah.
So we always,
it's hard to recharge.
Yeah, we always come after.
All right, take this one for yourself.
Yeah, a minute. Yep.
A couple more.
And then there's a moment when you realize that it just has to stop.
Yeah.
You know, like I was in Madrid, I think, tournament. It was the second year I was doing it with the tennis player. The vibe wasn't that great. And I just felt like I don't want to do that every single time. Every year in my life, being the same hotel in the same type of, I just decided to stop, came back home, and that was actually a super hard moment because those 2 years and a half where I was pretty much gone a lot, they build their own rhythm.
Yes, and then you come back into theirs.
I come back into theirs, and you're like almost like a stranger in some sort of ways. And later, I learned later that one of my triggers was abandonment. So it was just starting to become the perfect storm. So that's when shit started to happen. And at the same time, I find out that my dad was diagnosed with leukemia.
Oh, wow.
So he was gonna, you know, if you're lucid enough, you know, that it's not gonna last a long time. Thank God he was healthy. Otherwise, so he lasted 5 years instead of 6 months.
Mm.
So we would cherish that. But I had all my world kind of crumbling, you know, like not knowing where to be, what to do. And that was tough. So it takes, when you travel like that and you're by yourself, people think like, oh, it's great. You go with that.
Yeah,
no,
but it is glamorous, but also the life that goes with it, because you have your family waiting for it, is really hard psychologically. You are dad, but you also a husband. And how does that lifestyle take a toll at some point? Or does it?
Well, I mean, I'm sure the lifestyle, I mean... You know, then at some point you end up in couple therapy. But I don't think that it's not just necessarily that lifestyle. A lot of couples end up in couple therapy. A lot. It's like, I don't know the numbers. It's like 50% get divorced. So definitely every lifestyle creates some issues. But ours I think it's more the absence. And like I said, when I came back, I mean, my kids, of course, they're teenager, they have their friends. They do their thing. That's cool.
Yeah.
My wife, I wasn't there. She found a passion, was getting healthy. Like after the kids, like she dropped a huge amount of weight. She discovered salsa. She's the biggest competitor in the family. So she wants to compete. She wants to become world champion. She has a challenge. It takes 13, 15 hours a week of dancing. Mm-hmm. It's at night. Then there's the social dancing. So there is a whole world that I was, that I left, that I came back to, that was so different.
Mm-hmm.
And also because I was exhausted, probably tired and depressed.
Yes, that makes
sense. I was more focused on
others.
I was more focused on the selfish of what I was feeling and not understanding the aspect of the others.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was a very, very hard period. There was some struggle financially because you also had to pay for private schools. You know how it is in LA. It's like they make you feel that you have to put your kids in private school,
mm-hmm.
That they go receive the best education. And I think it's a lure.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you have to walk more.
Yeah.
So it's the rat race.
Yeah.
It's the snake biting his own tail. It's the feeding the monster.
Mm.
And then at some point, there is a moment where you just can't no more. And, you know, you have to, it can be, I mean, I went to a very dark place where, again, I was really about to do something that's completely crazy. I basically prepared the rope in the garage. But I get a call.
And I know that story, but each time you tell it, like I get goosebumps.
Which I don't know more, it's funny.
Yeah.
Because you process it at some point. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, the hand is beautiful. I'm sure you're going to have to prevent that we talk about this or let your audience know.
Yeah.
But I called my wife. She was at a congress. It was early in the morning. I didn't know what to do with myself. That was my only solution. And she picked up. But she picked up and she was like, you know, can do nothing for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the biggest slap in the face. Like, I'm telling you, I'm about to do something crazy. And you say, she's like, no, I can't do anything for you. You have to do it for yourself. You have to go see someone. Take care of yourself. I will always be there for you. Yeah, I guess it still does.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to, I'll be there for you. I love you, but it's on you. Like, I cannot help yourself. If you're struggling, if you don't see that you're depressed, if you don't see that you have to seek help, you're not going to get better.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, I think this probably would not have worked with everybody, but I think that because she knew you,
mm-hmm.
she knows you, it was the biggest love gift that she could have given.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I mean, she's a competitor, but I think sports help tremendously.
Yeah.
Sports,
yeah.
Dance.
Fight for your life. Like, what are you talking about? You want to
live down, you lose, but there is a moment where you always find a way to get up.
Yeah.
And now that I think about it, it wasn't really, I mean, it was, you know, the boxing bands.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I wanted to aim myself. I would have hopefully probably missed it. But it was a terrible moment, super sad, but in some sort of way, it was that deep moment when you're at the bottom of the ocean and you push back up.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, you do your process, you work. I don't think it's ever perfect or ever healed, but at least you recognize your triggers.
People they tell you like, just be happy, just like basically fake it. But I think to allow yourself to feel the pain is also mm-hmm. important to heal.
I was telling a story about be happy too. Again, you know, I'm talking about my wife a lot, but the other day she was like, you see how much pressure we put on our kids? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, we never told them to be whatever, or just want them, whatever, always told them, we just want you to be happy. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me, she's like, you know how hard it is, you know, to be happy?
Yes, it takes a stand.
It takes a lot. And, but I guess also that I feel very lucky that I have been groomed into being able, being smart enough to listen. That was the biggest thing that I wasn't doing, also because of the lifestyle and the job. The shrink, when I talked with the shrink, it was like, Fabrice, when you get into your room and you walk with patients, they all ask you about all the amazing adventure you've been doing, who you've been seeing, where did you travel? So they always ask about your stuff. But you don't, in that process, you ask them about their stuff, their issues. And he was like, try for a week. When they ask you, where have you been? Say, well, nowhere, no, nothing. Just don't answer and ask them three questions. Mm-hmm. And crazy enough, that first week I had three patients crying to my arms. And I could see maybe the last little thing that I needed to be even better. Mm-hmm. That came from all of this, you know? So always looking to the positive. And it was a defining moment. It was a very defining moment of
I imagine, of
progress. But, you know, it's like the 40 years old crisis, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, my 40s, I can tell that you're starting to wonder, all right, it's been 40 years already. I may have 40 more years.
Yeah.
Now what's next?
Exactly.
You know? What I love about that story is how your wife really kind of, it was a testimonial of love for me. Like that's so beautiful. And you went back up.
And it took time, but I went back up. And then after it was her, and then I was there and be patient.
You went through it. So it's almost a little bit easier to like give her a hand and also at least understand what she could be going through.
I would have probably not been able to do it where I was.
Yeah.
Because I got myself out and I was more healthy to be able to handle the next storm.
Mm.
And but that again, it's teamwork.
Yes,
you always go back. I always go back to sports. For me, it's one of the biggest teacher of life.
What could you have done differently, or if you knew that somebody is going through the same thing, what advice would you give that person?
I mean, first, don't ever do it. Don't ever fucking do it. Mm-hmm. That's the first one. Even so, you're at the bottom of call friends. The first one, if they don't answer, call another one. Just talk to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Talk. The talking and really like just daring to, even so it's, you feel like there is no hope, always try to reach out to someone. Someone's going to pick up. Someone's going to tell you what you need to hear. Someone's going to come to your house and take care of you.
And there is some free numbers that we're going to put down below also for anybody that need help, where you can call and people are there to help you, listen to you and help you out.
And a very simple thing, which was weird, like the first session with one of the shrink that I went with, and she was like, it's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're going through. It's very interesting the way she said that. It really resonated. One of my favorite book is The Alchemist as well, which helped me lead my career and my life. And the faith and the trust that it's going to be all right. If you can persuade yourself, it's not always easy when you're at the bottom of the hole, you know, but that really tremendously helped me.
Now you're here, you're with us, and you can now help other people continue to help, because I think it looks like this is what you came to this earth to do, you know, heal. but you also have to hear yourself in order to heal other people. I'm just really proud of you for going through this and finding the courage to go back up.
Thank you,
Chief Fabrice.
If you can, you're not afraid to be vulnerable and you share your stories and you talk with your friends. And I almost feel what you're saying, you're healing, but more than healing, you're getting strength out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're getting stronger, like even more resilient in terms of those triggers. My biggest one, like I said, my biggest trigger was really abandonment,
mm-hmm.
because I never lived alone.
Ah.
Stayed with my parents.
Yeah.
Stayed in that American family as an exchange student, back to my parents with my wife and kid, never been alone.
Mm.
And my kids were living, my wife was going dancing all night, she was going through things, my dad was going to leave. There was a lot of things leaving that I never, what am I going to do with him by myself? I don't know what to do with myself.
Mm.
And I realized, oh, it's pretty darn cool to be by yourself.
Yes.
You know? Now that's one, still I'm somewhat of a trigger, but now I recognize it and I control it. And when you talk with other people, like we discussed, you and I, that in Germany when we were with the French team, that's some of the discussion that helps you. You feel safe.
Yes.
You know, you feel you can talk about those things without any shame or guilt or nothing.
And not being judged.
Yeah, not being judged. That's another thing. Snoop Dogg just posted something pretty cool today about that. Like, don't judge. You don't know what you were going through in your childhood, what shoes you were wearing or not wearing, what's this, that. No, like the judgmental thing is the worst.
Yes. And like there is a song that I really like. I've been drinking more alcohol for the past 5 days. You don't know what people are going through. Your friends, your family, your husband, your wife, you know, like your coworker, they might sometime, you know, act in a way that you don't like, but you don't know what they're going through in their life. And try not to judge and try to be empathetic, because you never know what people are going through. And sometimes, you know, people hurt themselves because they look so happy and so, but inside they're hurt. Look at people in the eyes. If you look at people in the eyes, you can tell that something's going on. So now that you're back into the light, what are the habits, wellness habit that you are now doing for your life so you can stay healthy physically, mentally?
So I've always been driven into that, trying to, they use the biohacking, but basically better myself. I mean, when you're in contact with the professional athletes, you know, they try to get that one extra percent every time.
And it's a motivation too. Like I look at them training, I'm like, I want to train too. I want to work out too.
Get better. Just get better every day. That's what I mean. I like to try to get. I think it starts by recognizing that you're not perfect, that you're going to mess up sometimes, but you can always get back into the zone of trying to be as good as possible.
Mm-hmm.
My number one thing is sleep now.
Yes. So important.
So starts in the morning, actually, not at night. Starts in the morning. Get the morning sun for, I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
That's the Uberman.
I mean, kind of like there's a lot of people. I follow those guys, but I'm also like, it's my grandparents came from Burgundy. They were kind of farmers. Like at 85 years old, their blood tests were perfect.
Oh wow!
Yeah, because they were having a garden. My grandfather was waking up early, getting his pretty thick breakfast, would go to work in the garden, come back, get a snack, come back to the garden, get lunch, nap, get out, go for a walk, or long walk. He would walk like 2 hours, come back, a little snack, and a soup for dinner. and go to bed at 10:30 sharp and repeat and repeat. Might seem boring for some people, but it's like, I like that, to be able to get that consistency into my sleep. The Oura Ring helped me tremendously as well, because it could really tell me what was affecting my sleep. Eating too late, eating too much. So it's basically fish and veggies around 6, 7 p.m. max. The alcohol. I'm from Burgundy, so I love wine.
We like our wine.
I also know it affects my sleep.
Yes.
So at some point you get to an age or you get to a place where getting that sleep, you feel the energy, and that leads to everything else. That leads to going to work out. That leads to going ride my bike for 3 or 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And I would even put that after the food.
So after the food, okay.
Sleep, food, workout.
Uh-huh.
And then after, if you have time, it's meditation, it's
I love meditation.
Napping, it's that kind of goes back to sleep a little bit. And you know, I'm a big fan of the WAF Max.
Yeah.
And I do my naps in it. My assistant, she knows when I travel, if there's a cancellation. That's why maybe it's hard to get in. But if there's a cancellation, she lets me, she keeps the cancellation. I go spend 30 minutes, do a power nap in the WAF Max, which is a big inflatable device. It kind of cuddles you and you fall asleep.
We're going to put all those in down below so you can have access to it.
And the one that I really love also is the PMF device.
Oh, tell me more.
Pulse electromagnetic frequency. Mm-hmm. So it opens up, it recharges your cells. They have that brand Halo. They have a simple app, and you have prep or recovery. And right before bed, you have recover or calm. And it just, like, sometimes I fall asleep with it.
Really?
And what I realized is that the Oura Ring was giving me 20% more deep sleep and REM sleep after I was doing this.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Very simple to use, very easy to implement. It's a disc that you put, and it's one of my athletes who showed it to me. She's been using it, and she's double MVP, or she's one of the best. She's the best point guard in WNBA, Chelsea Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Chelsea, my little sister. She's the one who introduced me to it, and that's also what I like. I like to exchange the ideas.
Yes.
I like to try. And to make my own idea for myself. I believe there's too much like science, science, science. Yes, science. Okay, fine.
It's also what works for you.
Exactly. It's like cryotherapy. That's not going to work for some different type of athletes or different type of people.
Depends on your DNA sometimes.
Genetic and your parasympathetic. It changes, but I like to try it for myself. Mm-hmm. Same thing with food. And I have a pretty good sense of what makes me feel good or not.
I love that.
Yep.
Happy endings.
Recovery.
Recovery. Massage. Yeah.
Love deep massage. Super important.
So you think you're saying deep? I need to go deep in this. Touch my shoulder with your shoulder. No. Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah, and come back in the middle.
Okay.
And give me three more. One. So, last one.
Good job.
Yeah, I needed this to like feel better. Because now everything is good with you. Mm-hmm. Happy handing. I'm so happy for him. Really, so
thank
happy
you.
For you to that the world still get a chance to have you around.
A bit more of me. Thank you for having me.
It was an honor. Thank you for lending me your body, and I'm sure your body is going to thank you.
Yep.